Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races. Nick Tamaro is going to join us and looking forward to the visit. And one second. All right. No problem. Case. All right. We'll get Nick in a second. See if I can't regale you with with something good from. I'm very disappointed with Punxsutawney Phil and at least the one in Leicester. Who you know, just did not fire. It was not he never looked comfortable. He tried to loom up, I think got up to about fourth and then flattened out and that was it. So Nick Tamaro joins us after a valiant and fabulous Sunday in the booth at Sam Houston. Nick, good morning.
Morning, my friend. Good to be back with you, and it's been a little too long a respite, but I appreciate really from the bottom of my heart and on behalf of my whole family all the support that was given to us by you and the listeners and people that came on and said a lot of really nice things, and it certainly made the whole experience a lot easier to deal with, so really can't thank you enough, and it's true what I've long said. You meet the best people at the racetrack.
Well, and certainly in the power rankings of public handicappers from Texas, you've vaulted to number one. That is very apparent.
Was that because of me or them? Well said, Steve.
If you can't laugh, then what's the point?
You can't do anything. Right, exactly. No. Life's not worth living.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Well, we were all in the room. I said this repeatedly, actually, all week. I got to Vegas on Tuesday night, and so starting on Wednesday, and I was in there with Keith and Eric Wing and saying, Sam Houston really should be part of the Sunday action, and it'd be great for Nick, you know, to let his voice, you know, waft over the crowd, and it worked out perfectly. And of course, you had one race in particular. I mean, we knew the Ladies Classic was going to be dominated by Pauline Spurl. That John Connolly, that one, you should have seen the way, you could imagine the way it resonated in the room.
Yeah, you know, one of the first things I thought of when they were galloping out was, man, I mean, they must have really gone berserk in the ballroom. And I texted my friend Eric Bielek and said, did everybody go nuts? And he was like, oh, yeah, it was unbelievable. But, yeah, what a super exciting race. And, you know, it was obviously that kind of race, and the way it unfolded would have been a challenge for, you know, a seasoned veteran in the booth. And even though I'm a veteran now of 10 race cards, it was tricky, right? And you know, luckily I had a lot of assistance, as I have through this whole endeavor from my dear friend Travis Stone, and so he and I talked because he was, of course, here in town for everything with regards to my dad, and you know, he gave me a few tips on 3-turn races, and he's obviously called plenty himself, and just said, you know, keep the tempo moderate, and don't come out firing through the field as quickly as possible. Make it match the tempo of the race. So when things start to quicken, that's when you really want to get through the field a little bit quicker, but make sure that you're setting things up as you normally would in a race by identifying where the favorite is and, you know, what kind of obstacles they might have. If you can make a comment on pace, then do that. And so, yeah, that was really helpful. And it kind of reminded me as they were coming by, you know, get through the field. And then, of course, there was this wild early move that I picked up on probably a little bit too late. But after that, it was a great ride from James Graham. It was a great ride from Jared Loveberry to get into the to the photo, and then, of course, I'm right next door to the placing judges. So, you know, I was listening to them talk about the photo, and it was pretty clear that it was extremely close. And I mean, they blew that thing up to 300 times magnification. So, I mean, they were looking for anything they could possibly find in order to separate them. And in the end, there was no separation.
And of course, the funny thing about the separation is we, in the ballroom, everybody had assumed that another mystery had swept up and, you know, that he was going to be the winner and that Fantasioso and Strong Tide were going to dead heat for, you know, the longer, you know, as it dragged into 5, 6, 7 minutes. And so the assumption was that, so when the win dead heat went up, everybody was like, oh, are you kidding? That was the one thing I don't think anybody was thinking about.
Yeah, and you know, we have the wire, obviously, on the turf is just that mirror, and it's a little bit before the pole. So, yeah, I mean, when I went back and watched it, when I watched the replay, I felt similarly. I thought that another mystery had won outright, and it was it was just extremely close. And I went out and looked at the photo while they were looking and was amazed myself at how close it ended up being. So it was very surprising, no doubt. And, I mean, look, it's surprising that you get three in that kind of photo after a mile and a half anyway. So it was very, very interesting, very unique experience for me. And, luckily I, you know, didn't make any noticeable flub. And had a great day. It was a great day from top to bottom. It was a great day for us as a racetrack. And, of course, thank you for being one of our media partners that has certainly shed a lot of light on Sam Houston. And we've seen a lot of support at the windows from everybody, including Sunday. We broke our all-time single-day handle record. So it's nice to see that the Houston Ladies Classic and this card, the Houston Racing Festival, more specifically, has really become a wintertime staple.
You know, there is one thing about this that I have not, thank you, it's my pleasure, and it's been a lot of fun. The notable part of this should be included, right? That if another mystery wins, that A.J. Benton took?
I think Eric told me that he had Fantasioso. I don't think anybody took another mystery. Right.
No.
So if he had won outright, it would have made him a little bit closer. I hadn't looked at the standings.
$21.
But yeah. Yeah, I don't think anybody took another mystery, which I mean given his price was a tad surprising. But of course, I mean, game theory and things change at the final table versus any other part of the contest. Whereas, you know, it felt like if that had been a mandatory on Saturday afternoon, another mystery would have been 6-1 in the contest room.
Well, and in fact, the conversation yesterday with Chris Block or Monday with Chris Block, after listening to him, you're absolutely right. The people must have said to themselves, why did I not look harder? Because he says the only reason he was so dirtied up was because of the footing, the softish turf at Fairgrounds.
Interesting.
That's what muddied up his, you know, dirtied up his form. So.
Well, and the other thing, too, that I think this race reminded us is that the public has to stop assuming that Mike Maker is going to win every one of these races. Right, and
that's
the Journey
fair.
To Freedom was sort of an insane price at what he went off, especially because Fantasioso was, you know, many, many times that price, and I understood that a bond winning on Saturday was definitely going to run their price down, but that was a little much, and I think that since he's, you know, obviously he's won the Connolly specifically numerous times, and he's been winning these races across the country for quite some time, too, but yeah, we need to go ahead and face reality that while Mike Maker is exceptional and he probably excels more so in this division than any other, he's not going to win all of them.
There was another horse, actually, out of the sequence that I was surprised didn't get played. Greeley and Ben, 7-2 was a very palatable price on Greeley and Ben for him to go off third choice.
It really was, yeah. And, you know, and that had to do with, I think, a little bit of the West Point support for County Final, and it was a competitive race on paper. I mean, it actually was an even more competitive race at the draw, and we ended up losing a couple of horses that would have taken some money, but it was still very competitive on paper, and so County Final taking as much money as he did kind of caught me off guard. I thought Knee Deep in Snow would be you know, relatively solid favorite. But, you know, in the end, 7-2 on Greeley and Ben, who's just a win machine, was really, it was surprising. And it was a little bit higher than I expected. And he's a fun horse. He's a fighter. You don't want to get involved with him. And they all kind of came to him to challenge him around the top of the stretch. And he really, really dug in gamely. And, you know, credit to his connections, who've now seen him win, what, 13 races in about 14 months, which, no matter how you slice it, that's very, very impressive.
Well, didn't actually get a chance to talk to Broberg on Friday, but you know, he's an increasingly visible participant contest wise, and seemed to make a run, but then. But then was off the board, and then I guess he went on. He probably headed to Sam Houston because he won. What other stake did he won? He won a second. The Jersey Lily, maybe
Pulse Power Turf Sprint. Yeah, he won the Turf Sprint with
the Turf Sprint.
Seven cents.
There you go, seven cents.
Yeah. What fig did Greeley and Ben get? Did you look?
Yeah, I put it up the other day. It's not on this printed. It's not. It's at Derby Trail. If you want to see that quickly and easily, let me tell you right away, or fairly right away, he got
it. Was a very fast race by you know, by our standards, especially the track's been slow at night, and I think with the day card it was a little bit quicker. I think it was a little bit tighter as well, so it looks like Greeley and Ben got
91 for Greeley and Ben.
Okay.
91 for him, and 7 cents got a 95, actually. 93 for Pauline's Pearl. The Turf Cup got a 94. That Red Run, at this time of year, that number for Red Run, that's a horse that looks like, and Steve Asmussen, he sounded to me like he's pretty excited about the prospects for Red Run.
Yeah, he kind of had a wonky trip in the lone prior turf start at Kentucky Downs, excuse me, and I think he'd been really trying to get him another opportunity on the turf, and of course Joel gave him a perfect ride, and you know he's an off the pace type, but he's a little bit handier, and I think what Steve really loves about this horse is he was Gunrunner's first winner, so
right.
He's definitely got a soft spot for that reason, but yeah, he's solid. I mean, he looks like a horse that could definitely improve enough to try. You know, I would guess Transylvania, and you know, then potentially the turf stake on Derby Day. And I mean, if you're getting buyers in the low 80s on the turf, and as a you know, newly turned 3-year-old, I think you can be competitive in stakes races. So I'd be excited about him as well. And I think Bloodline, who finished second, could be a nice horse too. Brad Cox had wanted to get him on the turf. He's got a really interesting second and third family pedigree, being a George Steinbrenner bred horse, and you've got Dream Supreme as the second dam. So she, of course, produced Majestic Warrior, who's been a good turf influence, and she produced Crystal Current, who was a really nice turf horse for Bill Mott. So there's a lot more turf influence there than I originally thought, and then dug into the pedigree and was like, oh wow, this horse, you know, might really take to it. And it was Stolen Base's 3-year-old debut, and he ran back to his Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, so I think there's room to move forward there as well. So yeah, we're really big on this race, and we're really hopeful that this race continues to have a, you know, an upward trajectory. And getting Dan Bork and the Bork family involved in it was great, because Bob Bork was just universally beloved at Sam Houston, so it was a really nice thing to have a race now named for him. And it was good to see the family there too. They presented the trophy to
nice.
Steve, and you know, it enhanced the day even just a little bit more. So it was really, really nice from start to finish.
Excellent. Well, we were watching and enjoyed it. Although it was funny after I guess it was the after the turf mile. Then came the feature. Technically, the not that, you know, you got two grade threes, but the classic is the big ticket purse, and you know, we had all turned to some fairground, whatever it was. there was the fairgrounds, I think, eighth, which was like a very moderate group, but that was the next race for the final table. So none of us were, at least I wasn't paying attention when the when the Ladies Classic ran. I had to go back and watch a replay.
Oh, the loyalty, huh? It fades.
Well,
very
sorry. there's nothing we could do.
No, I mean, from a contest perspective, there was not much to say about the Ladies Classic. It was never going to be a race that there was a focus on. And look, I mean, I'm a realist as far as horses go. And Pauline's Pearl is a horse that has found her way into some good spots. Steve campaigns his horses as shrewdly as anybody out there. That's why he wins so many races. My hope is that this is kind of a launching pad for her, and that she starts to, you know, take a big step forward. He seems to think that she can, and I think it's a positive sign that she was a lot handier than she was as a three-year-old. So, you know, fingers crossed. I mean, this race has had a lot of success over the years in terms of producing horses that went on to bigger and better things. I mean, do I think that Pauline's Pearl is going to win the Apple Blossom? I certainly hope so. She's got a stable mate that she's got to prove that she's better than, first and foremost, in Clarriere. And we'll see what Latruska has coming back and some of the other horses that are now 4-year-olds, but hey, you know, she's now a multiple graded stake winner, and certainly has every right to take a big step forward in the future.
Well, it was a big success, and as you mentioned, and we've seen missives from the team, Martha Clausen and everybody else at Sam Houston. I saw Trey tweeted out too, you know, thanking everybody for the record handle and a terrific reception, and everybody in the racing office and the staff, and I'm sure on track. Was it a festive? Got a good atmosphere, and you had a good turnout in terms of the 100. I think $1 million on track, right? 900 and something and change.
No, it was about 280 on track. When Lone Star had their big day last year, they did almost $1 million on track, but that was also during the summer. We're Houston sports fans are very apathetic, and I count myself among those. But it was a beautiful day. We had a really nice crowd. We were down a little bit on track handle-wise. That likely had to do with the fact that some of our bigger players were in Vegas, number one. And we were on track 2 years ago. We had an NHC qualifier. So obviously that contributed quite a bit as well. So we're going to try and work out the calendar so that maybe we can get back to a point where we can do that and just beef up that on track a little bit. But yeah, it was a beautiful day. It was a big crowd. We did a cash giveaway for one fan that drew the proper number for the Ladies Classic itself. So no, it was a great time, and hopefully we'll get some of those people to come back throughout the meet.
Yeah, I thought I saw a number that started with 9. I didn't realize I was way off on that. I couldn't.
Yeah, we were I think 280 on track and 5.55 export, which, I mean, a $5.5 million export
is pretty stout. All right, maybe I just misread. Anyway, all right. Well, I can tell you that looking ahead to tomorrow, we're going to also go through that Aqueduct carryover sequence. But tomorrow, pulled up the card, and you've got a 9 race card on Thursday. Course starts at 5 Eastern, 4 Central. 86 horses entered in the 9 races. I mean, so basically 9.5. 9.5 per race. So if you're looking for nice field size, and it's a nice mix, very good card, I thought, without digging into it too deep.
Yeah, I mean, here comes Debbie Downer with me telling you that our weather is supposed to be a little rough tomorrow. More than likely, those two turf races are going to come off. It all depends on a variety of different things, as it does often with Texas weather. But the good thing is that, again, Frank Hoff and I were talking about this last week. These are turf races that will pretty much almost completely hold together if they're moved to the dirt.
Cool.
So he kind of had an eye on that, long-range forecast-wise. We're supposed to get a huge cold front that in the Dallas and Austin areas is going to include frozen precipitation, which I don't think we're going to get down here. But, it is a good card. The first two races actually are both really competitive claiming, and then the other one is an optional claiming starter allowance type. There's a nice maiden special weight race later on the card at 7 furlongs that looks like it might have a couple of first-time starters that can run a little bit. Sean Davis, who's had... He only has one winner at the meet, but his horses really have run well from start to finish. He has a first-time starter by Keen Ice in Now We Got a Show, who looks like he's been training pretty forwardly, including a a bullet half-mile drill, three works back. Sean Davis, of course, trained Golden Curl, who finished second in the Houston Ladies Classic. And you've got a couple of experienced runners that are coming out of pretty solid performances in there. I thought that was a pretty fun race. And then the nominal feature on the card is a one other than that goes as the sixth with a big, big field. And Mau Mau will bid to become the first three-time winner of the meet, having scored for 7,500. And Danny Pish claimed him, moved him up to 25,000 into a four life, and he won. And now he's facing one other than competition. So it's really, really neat to see how good he's gotten. This is, of course, a horse that was bred by Emery Hamilton and made his debut at a mile and an eighth on the turf at Churchill right as the pandemic was going. And, you know, he obviously changed hands at the claim box a couple of times since, but always had kind of a great deal of ability. And speaking of Sean Davis, he has Oliver in that race, who's a cowbred that has knocked heads with some of the cowbred stakes horses like Fashionably Fast over the last couple of years. So, yeah, no doubt about it. Fun card. The good thing is that the weather is only supposed to be an issue tomorrow. So other than having cold temperatures, we'll probably be back on the turf Friday or Saturday. And, of course, as far as the meet goes, the next big day is February 19th, Texas Champions Preview Night, and then March 26th is Texas Champions Night. So we hope to keep everybody on board. And, you know, there's not a lot to do at night after 9 o'clock or so, but there is Sam Houston.
Nice. Well, we'll check in on the Sam Houston front, do some alternation, get Trey in again maybe next week. All right, and don't want to overly tax you constantly, but I am going to tax you for a aqueduct look.
Yeah, so the carryover tomorrow is a little over 30,000 carried over from last Friday, right?
Yeah.
Both the Saturday and Sunday cards were canceled, and it's actually a really fun sequence. It starts with a maiden special that I picked Capone, who worked 10-2 at the Fasic Tipton sale in Maryland last year. And the interesting thing in going back and watching this work is that, you know, they're not really using the stick on these 2-year-olds in training anymore. Well, the rider sort of lost control of Capone, and he was kind of running towards the rail, and he or she starts to kind of adjust the reins and stuff. This horse worked 10-2 at Timonium, which usually the works are a fifth of a second to two-fifths of a second slower than anywhere else, because you basically come off a turn when they start timing you because it's a bull ring. And he worked 10-2 very, very easily. It's a big part of the reason why he went for 400,000, despite really having any damn side pedigree. And so I think Capone is very, very dangerous. The good thing is that this is the first leg, so you'll have a window into the race to see how much money he's getting. The other two horses I would use are Dad's Good Runner and Actualize. And more so, that's a rejection of the Inevitable Connection Rum Jar race from December 30th. That was a horrible race on paper. It ended up being a merry-go-round. The only horse I would use is Check That Chip, the five. But I'd rather keep it to the inside types. I went a little off the reservation in the fifth, and I know that Lolita Shiv Mongol contributed to why there was a carryover last week in winning with Mucho Sunshine, and I picked Our American Star. And my thought on Our American Star is that this horse was extremely wide last time. That was a day where there was definitely some benefit to being inside. And, you know, between Brachmaninoff and Macho Boy and a little bit of speed to the inside, they might move in here, you know, and that might just be enough to end up setting him up. Stanhope is clearly the horse to beat. Stanhope faced graded stakes horses compared to these last time in Dream Bigger and Dark Money. So I thought that those two were probably the only ones that I needed to use. I can just ramble on this unless you have anything to interject.
Well, we'll do it by a pairing, because I thought the first was a little tricky beyond Capone. And, of course, you mentioned Dad's Good Runner, who's half the Dad's Caps and Paula's Silver Lining and all those nice Scuderi horses that Michelle Nevin has trained for Vince Scuderi. And this one's a gun runner. You know, it's been enough time, right? It's been eight weeks. I mean, this could be a different colt now, and this may be the time, you know, after those two, you know, pretty unspectacular, you know, career starts, got to be a little disappointing. I see the Charlie Baker horse is getting plenty of love off the claim. I'm surprised you didn't at least touch on Cathedral Beach for Weaver, second time starter who ran, you know, kind of evenly.
Yeah, I just prefer Check That Chip of the Inevitable Connection Rum Jar horses. okay. from that race. Yeah, and more so because Check That Chip really took money, and for an outfit that's not, you know, Gustavo Rodriguez, it's totally unknown as to how proficient he might be with first-time starters. And this horse had a real trip. So, I mean, I felt decently about him maybe taking a step forward. So, but yeah, I mean, look, there's an argument to be made for Rum Jar and for him, and I mean, I think our shot will probably improve at second asking. You get the Bug Boy on, and he's been riding very aggressively, which is a good thing. So my thing with Dad's Good Runner was that the rail was probably not the place to be last time. He was all over it. And, you know, while Life is Great, I don't believe has come back. Sky and Sand came back and won. It was a good enough race. Right, and I think Kendrick wrapped up on him late. And if I'm going to take Luis Rodriguez, it's on a horse where there's only one way to go.
Fair enough. And in that second leg, I would only add, I thought Debo had to be at least covered somehow. In addition to the other two. Yeah.
Right. No, I totally agree. I picked him third. I don't have an argument with him. I think he's obvious. He was pace compromised a little bit last time out. Definitely faced better in some recent starts, and he should get a good trip.
Sixth and seventh, and seventh we'll have to really dwell on a little bit because I think it's the key to the whole sequence. Can you get away with Romantic Man and We Ready, the six and the nine, or do we have to go deeper in the sixth?
Yeah, I really like We Ready. I think I'm going to use the 8 and 9 primarily. I'll use the 6 probably as a backup. But We Ready was really had no chance last time with a wide trip on a sloppy track where the inside was the place to be. Now second off the layoff, in late with the Bug Girl. I think she's actually ridden fine. And I'm looking forward to seeing what she can do on this horse. Hopefully it's a fair track and we see horses able to make outside moves because this one really figures to get a good outside stalking trip. And, you know, this is a horse that has really faced much, much better in recent outings. I thought Total Effort first off the claim by Potts with Trevor McCarthy getting on was a little bit interesting. The horse obviously was bet down to 8-5 last time for Todd Pletcher and ran poorly. Maybe it was the slop. Maybe just needed a change of scenery. Potts' barn has not been what it was before. But, yeah, I thought those two with Romantic Man probably made the most sense.
Then the seventh, and I'll let you take it because this, to me, is an absolute quagmire.
Yikes. I mean, right, this thing is just really, really tough. I ended up picking Tale of Mineshaft, and I feel like that's kind of the cop-out pick because he's the unknown in a race full of horses that really are known to be just not any better than okay. And Brunate makes sense to me as well, but Tale of Mineshaft, at least, it's kind of a new horizon getting into Rob Attriss's barn. He really only has okay numbers with trainer changes in dirt claiming races. It's not as if this is supposed to be a big move up. But, you know, who are you supposed to trust of these drop-downs, Steve? Mr. Winston's drop looks really troublesome. Maddie's Marauder has run some good races of late, but, you know, he's still Maddie's Marauder, who's one for a million. Mr. Winston and Malibu Star, as I said, these are really suspicious-looking drops. I mean, Litterbox is really not without chance. Mm. He got a very good ride last time from Kendrick being inside and then popping out. But, you know, I always like to notice when you see a low-level claimer have an uptick of any type in their speed figures, and that's obviously the case with him. So, yeah, I mean, this is one where you could find yourself being five or six deep and still kind of sitting on the edge of your seat.
I agree. I started out 9-11, then I threw in Malibu. What do you do with Malibu Star? Tale of Mineshaft were the next two, and then I wrote 1-2-3. It's just ridiculous. You know, what do you do with the? I said this on the show the other day when Vasquez won with a 5-1 shot. I don't know what he was in the room, but I don't think there was much movement on that horse. I forget which one it was on Friday. I said at the time, I said, how do you not, you know, look three times at every Vasquez horse?
It's true. Right, it's true. You know, and you know, I was talking to Andy last night about this race, and he was talking about Scorpion Dynasty because I think he had gone on a podcast and the guy he was with said he liked Scorpion Dynasty, and the problem with Scorpion Dynasty is you're going to end up taking 4-1 on the entry, and Scorpion Dynasty by himself was probably 15, right? So it's part of the difficulty of having entries and liking horses that are one half of it. So it's frustrating. It's a very, very challenging race.
the eighth and ninth, I thought, you know, if you have to go deep in the seventh, you at least might be able to tiptoe through the next pair, because in the eighth, it feels like Answer In and Repo Rocks might be all you need. And in the nightcap, I mean, while there are some interesting horses, the favorite Eminency and Beach Boy Al felt like maybe enough to get through.
Yeah, I totally agree on the ninth. If it is anybody beyond Beach Boy Al and Eminency, I'll lose. Beach Boy Al ran very well on debut on top of a really hot pace, and Eminency, I thought, showed a really good amount of ability on debut when he finished, split the exact of agility and impressionist. Impressionist, of course, came back and won by a city block in his next start. And, I mean, with due respect to Raul Mena, this is a colossal jockey change. Trevor McCarthy's been riding exceptionally well. He's been very hip to the surface and how things are playing. And with the blinkers going on, I think you're expecting him to be a little bit more forwardly placed. Feels like a horse, too, that's going to benefit from a little bit more ground. So the concern with Beach Boy Al is that he might get mixed up in a pace with Pineapple Man. So, you know, we'll see if Kendrick can adjust to that a little bit. I think that Answer In and By Land and Sea and Repo Rocks are all must-uses in the eighth in some capacity. I picked Gemography, who might be finished, but, you know, look at the step forward. He took third off the layoff back in June of last year. I thought he was pace compromised last time out. Didn't really have much chance to cut into the margin with those horses in front of him. And, I mean, the likes of Lobster and My Boy Tate and Our Last Buck, they're in a different category than him. And he's going to be a big price. So I picked him. I wanted to use him, maybe more of the type to fool around with in the double and pick three, because this is another very, very challenging race. And I do think there are knocks on the one and two, both of whom are likely going to be among the two favorites. Answer In first off a claim by Robbie Falcone, who's had a really good winter. And By Land and Sea's last speed figure is likely 6 to 8 points too high. So it's very hard to believe that Pioneer Spirit ran as well as his figure looks that day. And it's hard to believe that By Land and Sea ran a career best race in his first third start as well. So I found it really hard. It's a really fun sequence. And, you know, the good thing is that it's one where if you don't quite have the capital to play the pick six, I think you can get involved in the pick five and pick four. And I think those will be very interesting as well.
There we go. Well, I'm going to write it up and Nick's picks and, winner tab will be at in the money. And Nick, this was great, and we'll talk Friday. We have the Withers on Friday, on Saturday.
Withers is on Saturday, exactly. They'll draw that today, and we'll see what the New York path to the Kentucky Derby starts to look like.
Exactly. Well, Nick, I appreciate it. Talk Friday.
You bet. Sounds great, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro, NTAM 1215, and the action picks up again at Sam Houston tomorrow. And, of course, the action at Aqueduct, as we discussed. We got about a little less than half an hour, 20-plus minutes, and I am dying to have you hear this story from Chris McDonald, who joins us now. Chris, congratulations.
Steve, thank you very much, man. And be honest, you just wanted to speak with somebody from Pennsylvania today on Groundhog Day.
That's a good point, actually. I mean, we're across the state. Does Philly have a groundhog? Is there something on you know what? He would be past Young Phil if there was.
Punk's yeah, past Young Phil, right? Yeah, Punk 20's out west. Yeah.
No, I know, but I'm saying you got Phil in Pennsylvania. It's big enough to have several groundhogs.
Correct. Yes.
Well, great. You know, this is a sports betting segment because Chris, who you'll see at Saratoga this summer, and loves the racing. But tell everybody how you did this, and it must have been going nuts those last couple of minutes of the late game, the Rams game, because it could have gone wrong for you. Six different times.
A million ways. Yes. I'd like to say I handicapped and, you know, watched film study and all that, but no, it was, and actually it was, you know, I put in $20 in my account Saturday night, and, you know, I thought the Chiefs were going to win, so 9 out of 10 were Chiefs scores. The last one I came to, I said, let me throw one on score on Cincinnati. And, yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it didn't really kick in until, you know, the nerves didn't kick in until the fourth quarter. I did think, though, that the second game, you know, two defensive teams, you know, I thought the sweet spot was around 14 to 24 points, somewhere in there, and I thought the books had the line correct. So, you know, I was thinking 17-14, you know, but, you know, with San Fran not getting a field goal, that wouldn't work. So, yeah, I pretty much was on the 20-17 or 23-20 on the second game. But, yeah, it's just it's crazy when you look back at it and you see how many things could have went wrong. You know, so, yeah, it's I got money for horse racing now for the year, so I'm feeling good.
Well, I wanted to find this. People who were tuning in the middle of the show and didn't hear me with the opening when I laid out who was going to be on and that Chris was going to join us. Chris, with one of his plays that was a two-leg parlay of the two exact scores of the two games, and gets Bengals 27, Chiefs 24. So it sounds like you had 9 tickets with the Chiefs winning, and this was your only ticket with the Bengals. And then did you have the Rams beating the Niners on all tickets?
Yes, Rams beating the Niners on all tickets, and either like 23-20, 20-17. One was like 26-23, but I had a couple that were 20-17. I thought it might be an overtime game, and I thought, like I said, the books had it right. I thought Rams were going to win. So, yeah, I was looking at 3-point spreads like that for that game. So, yeah, it just it was amazing. I mean, you know, I was on the phone with Mike. Mike was cheering me on. You know, it was 17-7 at one point, and I still didn't lose hope. I said, Mike, you know, the game's going to swing, and I think the Rams are going to come back, and we could be looking at a 17-17 overtime game or something. And you know, it was just crazy that it worked out. And then at the very end, Rams intercepted. I'm like, oh, my God, this guy's going to go in for a touchdown.
Well, it could have gone the other way, too, because the dropped potential interception at midfield.
Right in the chest. Yep.
If he catches that, you're done on that side, too. It's unlikely that you get it.
It was crazy. It was just crazy. I'm looking forward to doing some horse trips with my brother. We go to Saratoga every year. Like I said, we have a little timeshare in the backyard, we call it. And, you know, the money just gives you a little breathing room. You know what
I mean? Let's tell everybody what you won.
$57,902.
For a total of $20, right? $2, yep. $10. Let me ask you this: if the Chiefs had won 20, did you have Chiefs 27, Bengals 24?
I did not. No,
ooh.
I didn't have it the other way. I did not.
Unbelievable.
Most of my Chiefs scores were them handling the game pretty well. 30-13.
Unbelievable.
So most of them were a bigger spread like that. And then, like I said, incredible. I got to the last game. I said, you know what? I'm just going to throw one in on Cincy for the hell of it. And, it's like one of those things. Like me and my brother, you know, we text back and forth. And, you know, a couple times during a football season, we let me see what scores you took or whatever. So I did it a couple times, maybe, you know, probably the whole football season, a total of $100 or something, you know. And we were always like, oh, if lightning strikes once, you know, you never know. Just throw it in, you never know. So that's exactly what happened. Just threw in some bets and happened to hit. So
it's an action bet, and you know, you're sitting there. I was sitting, you know, in the event center at Bally's, and I was playing basketball. You know, Colgate was on Saturday afternoon early, and you know, I put a ticket in. I just, you know, I was watching it on the phone on ESPN Plus. I mean, that's just what this is. I mean, it's for fun. You know, John Hurd, Hurricane had the. He had a bunch of parlays that, you know, he had one of his parlay tickets for, you know, just, again, just action and having fun. But this is great. You did this convention.
All day Sunday, I had the football games on, but the sound off because I was listening to your, I love your NHC show, especially, you know, on Sundays of NHC. And so I was listening to your show all day. And just watching on TV, and
I love it. I was so when I don't know what time it was that I later on. I think it must have been Sunday night, or maybe I was, you know, you lose in terms of the time when you're in Vegas. I mean, you wake up at 3 a.m. and it's on. So I forget when I saw it, but I was like, oh my God, this is fabulous. Chris, just 60 grand. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was nuts. Yep.
You know, and I have not even noticed, exact score, correct score plays. I'm signed up on Caesars, and so I don't know if it's a FanDuel thing, or I had not noticed that as an option.
Yeah, I just picked up on it like back in October or something. I said, what's this correct score thing? And I never parlayed them. I would just do a correct score, and usually, you know, $10 will get you back, $1,500 or $2,000 or something like that.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And then I was looking at it, I was like, hey, you know what? I wonder if you could do a correct score parlay. As crazy as that is. And they allowed it. And one thing I want to say, too, is it was very odd because, I mean, I'm not a – I bet, of course, way more on horses than I do on sports. But it was very odd because I've had a couple of parlays like during the year with football teams, and you know, you hit your first two legs. Let's say I have three legs, like you hit your first two legs, and on the third leg, if you're winning that, they offer you like a cash out option.
Yes,
will pop up on you, and no cash out option the whole time, because they kind of screwed themselves. Because if a cash out option would have popped up for like $5,000 or something, you know what I mean? I would have taken it.
How about that?
You know, so they lost out by not offering a cash out option on that, and it's weird because they always do. They want to entice you to take the cash out, you know, so they're not paying the full Monty. And the whole time no cash out option. And I said, for a $2 bet, I mean, maybe even if $2,000 came up to cash out, you know, when it was like 17-14 or something, you know, because you never think you're going to hit the big one. And you're thinking, wow, for $2, I could cash out and make, you know, $4,000, $5,000 now, you know. And they didn't offer it, and it was a loss, you know.
That is great. That is just tremendous.
So, after your show, I'm getting on the horn. I'm booking my Lone Star Park trip with my brother, Memorial Day weekend, and my Saratoga trip. And I'm looking forward to this year.
It's going to be special. I mean, to be able to bank that and put some away, and there's always something. You know, it's such a bonanza that it's such a luxury.
You talked about it before, like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. You said, you know, when you hit something, buy something, so you have something physical to say, hey, you know, I did good. I have this, you know, instead of just blowing it on this and that. So I'm going to pay off my car and buy a couple things for the house and. You know, plan some trips, and I go on. My girlfriend goes with me all the time. We go to Keeneland. I was in Tampa for opening week, so I love traveling and going to horse races. That's what my first love. So, you know, it's like me and my brother. We walk into Saratoga. You know, I have a DRF in my arm, and to me, it's like Christmas morning. You know what I mean? I just love going to the races. You know, so.
Well, the one thing about this story that I don't like is that it was a sports bet that got you on me instead of racing.
I play in tournaments, and I said to myself, this is just crazy. Like, I always wanted to be on the big show after the NHC weekend. But not for stupid football scores.
This is too spectacular. What did did Darren Rovell, did he find yours as well as the other guy?
So he tweeted out that huge score, 579,000 for the guy who hit $20. And I looked at it real quick, and I was like, oh wow, you tweeted out my bet, because I didn't know if anybody else had it. And I said thanks, and then he looked into it, I guess, and he saw. Or he has a contact with FanDuel and saw that you know, two other people hit it, you know, and like every other horse player, you look back and say, oh my God, why didn't I put more than $2 on me? I mean, it's like, you know, so it looked like there was three of us that hit, and then those guys hit big. The one guy hit $145,000, and then the other guy was 579. It's crazy. I mean, it's just even crazy to think that three people had the same exact parlay. with the same exact scores is just crazy.
Well, and the guy now, the guy that did it for 20, that he did it with promo, right? With a promo money.
Promo money, yeah, $20 in promo money, yeah, yeah.
And
so he smacked the whole $20 down on it, yeah.
And you had, so you had, of course, you had 20, but it was 10 different bets for $2 each.
Right, correct.
And somebody else had it for six? Somebody else had it three times?
Somebody had it for five and hit for $145,000.
How about that? There we go. Okay,
so
there, five. Yeah,
two,
that makes sense.
Him five and the other guy 20. Yep.
Unbelievable.
29,000 to 1 odds.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So they basically paid out, well, they paid out like 800, almost eight, well, no, 579 plus what, the 200,000 and
the, two,
and the 579,
yeah.
Six. Yeah, like 800,000.
Yeah. Because I'm sure, too, those other two guys, if they would have been offered a cash out payment, they would have taken it, too. I mean, I would assume.
You taught them a lesson.
Yeah. But you know what it is? It's probably some weird algorithms that they deal with, and they're like, this thing has no chance of hitting, you know what I mean? So, like, we're not even going to offer them a payout because it ain't going to hit, you know? So, that's probably what happened.
Got to ask this, too. How many different kinds of sports wagers, you know, will you be making, do you think, just in general?
Well,
different sports
and
propositions.
I love football is my first love. I love football. I love betting, you know, a little. I'm not a big bettor. So, you know, throw $50 on a game here, you know, maybe $100 on a game here. And so basically football and then the NCAA basketball tourney. I love
that,
too.
There you go.
That's it. I mean, I like baseball. I like all the sports. But as far as betting goes, football and NCAA tournament and then everything else is horse racing. So...
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm not into the everyday, you know, betting baseball. And that's just not me. And plus my work and everything, you know, I'm a horse racing guy on the weekends. I work 50 hours during the week. So, you know, I just don't have time for it all.
Well, this has the potential to, between this and you're good. You've got the greatest tagline on your Twitter. And Chris's, I'll put up your link on today's listing. But Saratoga Horse is Chris McDonald. And, you know, this has got the potential to put you ahead for life, as they say.
Well, it probably got me even for January. For my you know how it goes, Steve, right?
yes, but this will go a long way. Chris, I'm so happy for you, and
Thank you, Steve.
I'm delighted to get you on too, and continued success. And I'll see you soon enough, either at
I will definitely hunt you down at the spa. Me and Mike will be there, and me and my brother Joe will be there. So
excellent.
We'll hunt you down.
I love it. Chris McDonald from Philly and 57,900 that he plucks out of FanDuel on Sunday by tabbing both of the championship game scores. And a lot could have gone wrong, but it only takes a couple of things to go right. That's why it's pointed on either end, they say, about the football. The football bounces funny ways. Thanks,
Thank you,
Chris.
Steve.
Not
Appreciate
at all.
It, man.
My pleasure. Be well.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
You got it. Chris McDonald. Seth Merrill listening in. We got about 10 minutes to spend with Seth. And did you hear that story?
That was nuts. That was crazy.
How about that?
All I could think is coming down to the, you know, you're in the last 10 minutes, and the way these playoff games have been going, you got to be developing an ulcer watching those games. Because, as you say, 1,000 things could go wrong. Oh, man, that's great. That is great. Yeah.
I saw it, and I know him and his pal Mike Yek that come up to Saratoga, and they're on Derby Trail, and known him a long time now, and they're great fans.
It was also hilarious. He said, "Yeah, I've always thought it'd be great to be on the Big Show the week after the NHC, but I didn't quite see it playing out this way."
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. 57,900 for $20 worth of bets. That's the proverbial bet a little, win a lot. And of course, when it came to NHC, and you and I talked Sunday going into the championship day there as well. You had me on Capitol. It kind of played out pretty close to some degree. It played out. I mean, the final table ended up being most of the, I guess five or six of the names we talked about going into Sunday. But once David Harrison, you know, got up into that 300 plus range, it was going to be tough to catch him.
Yeah, and a great performance by AJ Benton. You and I talked about him on Sunday morning because it was when we were out there covering for OTB TV a couple of years ago. I want to say he won the first day or the second day. He won one of the 2 days.
Yes,
so I
for a first
had
day
him on the show, and he kind of went through his stories from New Hampshire and comes to Saratoga every summer. And so I said, "Well, we'll have you on this summer up at Saratoga," which we did. So now he's a guy who I follow. But a great performance from him. I always like to root for the locals or those with local connections. So I was rooting for Duke, Duke Matisse. And then right at the wire there, he got knocked out of the final table, which felt for him because that was rough. He was flirting around, playing well all the last day, but just didn't quite make it. But, yeah, it was fun. And, again, tip my cap to you. I will go with your previous caller, and I'm sure a lot of other people. Once again, you guys did a great job. You and Pete has been a great addition as well. It's just fun listening. I continue to say it. It's hard to believe that a horse racing handicapping contest on radio would work out, but it is. And part of it is you guys just bring over some of the top names in the game. And that last day is a lot of fun because you'll get guys who didn't make the final table, and they'll sit there and analyze how they would play it. And that's just, it's just fun to listen to those guys and the strategies and whatnot.
Well, because it combines several factors. I mean, you've got the aspect of the, you know, of the actual, you know, handicapping sense. Then you've got the game theory and, you know, all the elements that come with that. So it's got everything. It's just a terrific atmosphere, and it writes its own script. We didn't have as exciting a finish as we did last year, but it was still quite entertaining. That part you can't stop. It was really the semifinals where the tension was this year.
Well, when you were talking with Nick, that race, that Sam Houston race in the final table, played out to juggle things up a little bit, and there was some excitement there when the dead heat flashed up on the board. So yeah. there was some move ups the ladder, which you guys talk about a lot too. Gee, if you're sitting down seventh, eighth spot, are you looking to hit a home run, or are you looking to move up three rungs and add some money to your total? And that's an interesting aspect of the strategy as well.
Well, how about some strategy? You got about a minute and a half, Seth, to give out some numbers, and you came close again last week. You just missed that pick four.
Yeah, it's tough. I'll zip through the sequence super quick here because race six, I'm two deep, six in the seven. I Capote probably has the edge, but I'll use Dr. DJ as well. So I'm six and seven.
This is
there.
Tampa. Tampa?
Yeah, Tampa. Yeah, Tampa. Seventh race, I have it 7-3-6, so I'll use Hoity-Toity on top. I have the also eligible 9 on top. That one's scratched, but I think Hoity-Toity is alive in there. But I'll go 3 deep, 7-3-6. 3 deep again in the 8th leg, 7-2-1. Bastien LeBrown on top, Dan Centino on board the Victor Barbosa import over from the other side of the state, so I like all of that, but I'm 3 deep in that 8-7-2-1. And I'm going through the sequence because I tossed in kind of a crazy horse in the last leg. I'm 4 deep in the Tampa 9, 2-7-6-4. It's a tough race. But Money and Honey at 10-1, I think, is very playable off the last race. Billy Jane and Lady Jean are the logicals. But Sweet Baby Ray Lynn, the 4 horse at 20-1, tossed in an absolute clunker last time. This is like one of those with the old dot theory, if people remember that. I think this may have been one of those no-dot horses. And I just have a feeling this horse will run better today. Ferrer on board. So at 20-1, I'll toss that one in the mix as well. I'll go 4 deep in the night, 2-7-6-4.
Well, Seth. Gonna put up Gus's picks as well for Tampa and Gulfstream. And I thank you as we gotta close out with Phil Connors on the organ for the Groundhog Day celebration in Punxsutawney. Doing my best here to put everybody in the Groundhog Day mood. Do we know an answer? Yes or no? Did he see his shadow?
Yes.
There you go. All right. So 6 more weeks of winter?
Yep.
Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow 2 on your Twitter. And Capital OTB, you on TV today?
I am. Go on in probably about 15 minutes. A little Tampa, a little Gulfstream.
There you go. Tune in on RTN as well. That's an option, folks.
That's right. Pull it up on Roku, one of the RTN sub-channels.
Seth Merrow, thank you, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Good luck to everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.